And tonight's subject of Match of My Life, played 461 games for the Blues, still the club's most successful captain. It's with Kevin Ratcliffe this evening.
City Sport. One player, one life. The Match of My Life. City Talk 105.9.
Yeah, I was born up in Mancott, but lived in Connorskey for a short period for about 4 or 5 years, and then we moved to the other side, shall I say, is from Connorskey to Queen's Ferry. Lived on the hill just above the Asda, behind the Plough pub on the estate there. My dad and mum and dad moved there, I think it was in about 65, so I went there, and that's where really I sort of brought up, really. That's when, you know, spending something like 10, 12 years in and around that sort of estate, and my nan and grandad were down the road, my other nan and grandad were in Connorskey, so it was, you know, my dad's brother lived literally 10 doors away from us and still does live that from me mum and dad, and as years go on, like Gary Speed, live around the corner, well, they live around the corner, lived in the same street, just around the corner.
Brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I've got a brother who's 11 months younger than me, and a sister who's 8 years younger than me, so, you know, it was really me and my brother early on in life, wasn't it, just sort of growing up and competing against each other and in everything, and we're still doing that as well, and, you know, it's a bit of a difference, really, you know, because she was there, really, I was only at home for sort of 8 years with her until she was 8 years of age, and then really I've moved out.
Football family then, presumably. When you say,
yeah, my dad was a footballer. He played locally. He's a tricky little left winger.
Yeah,
he's only about 5'8", but apparently, you know, great crosser of the ball. And I actually played with my dad on a Sunday. My dad and my uncle, and my uncle was a centre forward, and my dad was a winger, and, you know, it's nice to say that you've actually played with your dad and your uncle in the same side, although I was only 15, playing on a Sunday league. But my dad played, and he had trials for Everton and Manchester City.
Here's a little bit of a curveball for you. What's your strongest childhood memory? You know, a real vivid from the early part of your life that sticks in your mind.
As in playing, you mean?
Anything, I mean, just from being brought up.
Playing in the backyard, playing on a barrel with the coal. Remember the coal bunkers?
Yeah.
And there was a coal bunker. We used to play all sorts of off-ground tick and things like that, and the British Bulldog. And we're in the backyard, and we'd not long moved into the house. And I always remember standing on top of this barrel, and all the panels for the coal bunker were leaning against it. And I jumped off and dislodged them. And as I landed, they all fell on top of me, and I broke my leg. I'm not too sure if that's why I become left-footed.
Yeah.
Because I'd broke my right leg at an early age, because obviously then I was hobbling about, even with a plaster, trying to kick a football, so the only foot you could kick it with was a left foot.
We'll talk a little bit about your pace as a player a little bit later on, but a lot of kids, you know, that went on to become professional footballers say that they maybe had a choice of a couple of sports that they could have represented the district at, maybe even more. Was athletics something that you excelled at school as well?
Hated it. Hated athletics, yeah. I thought we were a bit of a bind to go and compete. I did it, 100 and 200 metres, anything over that, just didn't enjoy, really, didn't want to be there. I remember sort of early back, sort of last year in school, or 2 years before I was finishing, I did a 200 metres run, and when it was clocked, they sort of looked at it and weren't quite sure that I'd done it in something like 23 seconds at 14 or 15 years of age, and they didn't realise how quick I was.
You were representing both Chester and Everton beyond Flintshire Boys, weren't you? Which probably illustrates just how different the school setup was then with youth football.
Yeah, one of the main reasons that was a fella called Cliff Sear that was at Chester Football Club doing the youth team. He was an absolute gem. Fantastic fella, and just made you feel so at home. Then obviously Everton were interested. George Ryan, the scout from St Asaph, had been watching me for ages, and he kept in touch with me dad, and he got to be good friends with me dad, a great fella. I went to Everton, it was great. The setup was absolutely fantastic. Belfield then was a state of the art, and, you know, just to go there and train and be part of it, being an Evertonian, and, you know, so me dad as well. I was still divided because I wanted to, you know, deep down, I wanted to play for Cliff Sear because he was such a great fella, the way that he treated you. And I remember I was having trials for the Welsh under-15s, and I got an injury. I pulled my hamstring. So Chester were kindly enough to pick me up and, you know, allow me to go in and get treatment. And there was a physio there called Uncle Vin. And he used to sort of do me treatment with the likes of, you know, the first team players and Stoughton and Mason, people like that. And I'd be in there and they'd be cracking jokes, and I was only a young kid, and I'd have to be in for something like 9:15, and I was missing school for getting treatment to get fit, you know, which wouldn't be heard of really these days. And I was in there, and the manager at the time was a fella called Ken Roberts. Ken used to come in about 9:45 and, all right, you ready? Come on, get in the car, I'll run you to school. So he'd run me all the way to Connors Quay from Chester, and it's just the way that they looked after me. And, you know, I'd like to think, you know, it stands in good stead, because Ken used to play football with me dad as a youngster. And I always remembered that. And when I got the Chester job, I brought Ken in straight away, you know, even though I didn't really know him too well. But I just brought him in because of the way that he used to treat me as a kid. I thought, well, he'd be great for the kids' setup. If he treated me like that, then he was the first team manager, what would he actually be like if he was in head of all the kids? And I took him to Chester, and I took him to Shrewsbury with me, and I must admit that the talent that he brought through was outstanding. You know, you look at the likes of Joe Hart, who's playing now, you know, the lad Edwards, Dave Edwards, who's at Wolves. So he's brought a few players in. He knows a little bit about football, shall we say.
That's a fantastic story. Obviously, your dad was from a football background, and what did your mum feel about the career path of becoming a footballer? Was she telling you to get your schooling right first, or how did it go?
Mum's very quiet and just sits in the background and sort of makes cups of teas and cheese crusts for me when I go down. And very strange, my mum very rarely come and watched us play. She was a bag of nerves, used to smoke maybe 20 fags a day, 40 fags a day, doesn't smoke at all now, and she hasn't done for maybe 20 years. Maybe that's after I finished playing. So there's some good come out of finishing playing, but no, she very rarely, she couldn't watch, she was too nervous. I don't know why. She had to like football, I suppose, because it's all we talk about in the house. I think it's nice that she has got a daughter, Helen, my sister, that she can actually bring her to some senses, and she's had three girls, so yeah. You know, obviously the girls then bring a bit of sanity, but my dad's obviously was trying to talk football to the girls.
When you joined Everton then as an apprentice in 77, you say it was state-of-the-art, Belfield was great. What about your first memory of talking to a first teamer and experience of that, because you're so guided, aren't you, by your surroundings at that point?
First time met a first teamer, well, nervous. You know, being an Everton supporter and watching these players, the fact that you were actually doing these boots for these players, or you're assigned to clean their kit or dry the training kit, and if that door was shut, you had to knock on the door. And you could just not knock on the door and walk in. You had to wait until one of the first team pros actually said, come in. And mine was the top room, what was known as the top room. There's four rooms used to be at Belfield. So you've got the apprentices, the first year pros. Your type of sort of first teamers come, sort of nearly first teamers, and then the main room, which was great, because the thing with achievement in life is to reach your goal, isn't it? A next goal. And as an apprentice, you wanted to get into room two. And then when you were in room two, you wanted to get into room three. And I actually was on the first team room, the number four, in cleaning, when you got the likes of Bob Latchford, Roger Kenyon, Dave Jones, who's now at Cardiff, Mick Lyons, George Wood. I'll tell you what, if they said jump, you asked them how high it was, because you didn't want to dig off one of them. Yeah. But for years and years, I thought my name was either Towel or Boots, because that's all you'd heard. Towel or Boots! And you knew that it was one of your... but I think Bob Latchford, I thought was an absolute gem of a pro, just sitting in the room, putting the kit out, and he come in one day and he seen I was putting the kit out and actually started hanging it up with me and sort of just chatting. And I can't remember what we were talking about, because I'm thinking, Bob Latchford hanging the kit out. Couldn't wait to tell the rest of the lads I've sorted my room out. Yeah.
Did your first team debut come before you travelled on an away trip as just part of the travelling trip?
No, I went on an away trip to Norwich, I think my first trip was, and I roomed with Peter Eastow. I remember having a minging suit on. And I think I spilt water over my trousers or something like that. So I had like the hairdryer trying to dry it. And yeah, that was my first trip. And just seeing how players react, you know, and what they do, what the build up to the game, how do they deal with it? Because this is one thing, you know, maybe they're doing more of now, is actually travelling in a way. You know, staying in a hotel, what you eat, how you prepare for the match. And I couldn't believe that straight after the meal that Brian Kidd just stood up and said, "Good night, lads," and went to bed. And I thought, you know, it's only like 7:30, 8 o'clock. He's not going to sleep for that long, is yeah. he? But it was just that he was going to his room to relax, to prepare for the game, as maybe he did every Friday night. So you pick up little things like that from these experienced pros that have been doing it for years and years, and take it on board. You know, I said I served a great apprenticeship playing reserve team football alongside the likes of Roger Kenyon. You know, learning the game, learning what to do, what not to do. And, you know, you learn more from them type of players than you actually maybe learn on the training ground, because it's real life. That's what's happening.
Take us to your debut then. Spare no details for us. Can you take us instantly back to the sights, the sounds, the smells of that day, from waking up to getting to the ground and playing?
Man United, Tuesday night. Didn't think I was going to be playing. Got to the hotel. Slept in the afternoon for maybe 30 minutes. I can't remember who I was rooming with. I went down for the pre-match and John Gidman was ill. He'd fell ill in the afternoon and that was my chance. You know, that Gordon Lee come in and I think Mick Lyons told me that I think you're going to be playing and he's going to move Billy Wright to right back and put you in at centre back. And that was it. It was a boring game. It was 0-0. But I think the highlight of the game for me was actually about 70 to 80 minutes into the game, 55,000 or something was there, 54 I think. And Man United made a sub and Jimmy Greenough come on. And Jimmy come on, long blonde locks of hair, and he was one of my sort of people that I love watching. You know, I'd been to watch Stoke once or twice and I always remember this fella up front, Jimmy Greenough, and as a young kid, and for me to actually make me debut against him, and that was great for me. And I'd never met the fella, and then at 35 I went away to Mauritius. We were playing in an over 35 tournament and there was about 50 odd players, and I've gone to my room, you know, I don't know who I'm rooming with. I'm sat in my room and the next minute this fella comes in with this big case, old fella, hounched over, hobbling in. I said, "I'm sorry, lad, but this is for ex-pros only." He said, "My name's Jimmy Greenough." And we had a good couple of days together, to believe it. I said, you know, I made my debut against you. You know, just how things all swing around, isn't it? That, to have that, and I mean, I thought that was the icing on the cake, and then maybe a few months later was even better, because my second game was against West Ham in the semi-final of the FA Cup. I didn't even play in the first game against Villa. When they drew 1-1, Brian Kidd got sent off. So you're thinking, a forward gets sent off, that there's no chance you're going to be playing. And I think there was me and Joe McBride. And I thought I was there to keep Joe company and maybe just do a bit of sort of cleaning up, put the kit out and do the boots. I was 19 and I got there, and then we get to the hotel in the afternoon and we're going to go down for dinner. And we get in the lift and we're going down. Just as we get in the lift, Gordon Lee walks out the lift, and as he gets out the lift, he turns and he looks at both of us, and just as the doors are closing, he says, "You're playing, you're not." And before Joe could have a go at him for not picking him, and I was playing, I was absolutely stunned that I was being playing. I'm going down for lunch, you know, and all of a sudden the butterflies started going, and, you know, that afternoon the supporters come in, and because we're right smack in the centre of town, and both sets of supporters coming up, and in the town, you've seen them outside. It was just, you know, just a great feeling. And, you know, okay, we lost the game 2-1, but, you know, just to see the disappointment on the players afterwards, on the bus, on the way home, stood me in good stead, because I didn't want that to be happening to me. And fortunately enough, never lost a semi-final after that.
Okay, we're with Kevin Ratcliffe tonight, and Match of My Life. We'll talk about the silverware very soon indeed and go on to his international career and also his career in management tonight. And join us in part two. We'll be back with Kevin Ratcliffe and Match of My Life.
City Sport. One player, one life. The Match of My Life. City Talk 105.9.
People are doing the Adidas Women's 5K Challenge for all sorts of good reasons.
I'm doing it because the charity I'm running for helped my baby.
I'm doing it because I was that baby.
Sign up today at womenschallenge.co.uk. The Adidas Women's 5K Challenge, September the 7th, Sefton Park, Liverpool.
We're doing it together!
Adidas. Impossible is nothing.
Everybody's escaping to a better job. citytalkjobs.co.uk.
Question: which famous Liverpool building has just undergone a magnificent refurbishment? That's right, the brand new China City restaurant, of course. Call into China City and feast on the finest, most mouth-watering Chinese food from the extensive a la carte menu. The service really is top-notch, and the in-house karaoke is something else. Special function rooms for business meetings too. The all-new, fully refurbished China City restaurant, Nelson Street, right in the heart of Chinatown. Book your table now on 709-2009.
City Talk 105.9.
Developing partnerships, creating opportunities, growing sales. City Talk 105.9 presents an exciting opportunity to advertise your business to a whole new audience.
My name's Steve Woolley, Managing Director of K-Seal Glass. We decided to advertise on City Talk to increase brand awareness, and we're very pleased with the way that our Seeing Things Clearly campaign has gone so far. We decided to undertake the sponsorship of the Pete Price Talk Show programme, and we're very pleased with the way the alignment of the brands have gone. As a result, we've increased our business considerably and also our brand awareness. Being new to radio advertising, we didn't really understand the process involved. We're over the moon with the way the creative team at City Talk have helped us through the process and guided us through the process in developing a very effective marketing and advertising campaign. The new campaign will start in the autumn with new products, and we hope that sponsorship with the Pete Price programme will also continue.
To make sure we're talking about your business, call Gillian Taylor now on 472 6866 and ask how we can help grow your profits. City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
A swift story. Mary's Jodie's nan. Mary lives in Speke. Jodie lives in Newcastle. Jodie loves football. Mary loves the internet. Today is Jodie's birthday. Yesterday, Mary bought a footy kit online. Today, thanks to Swift Dispatch and to her mum's horror, Jodie's wearing it to a party.
For next day deliveries, Swift Dispatch is affordable, reliable and secure. Call 0845 241 6666 now or visit swiftdispatch.com. Swift Dispatch, the award-winning courier service you can rely on.
City Sport. One player, one life. The match of my life. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to Match of My Life, and we're in the company of Kevin Ratcliffe tonight. He's been telling us about his early memories of making the grade with Everton onto his first team debut. Often interested with former pros at which the point where they make the first team debut, and then almost it's an image of I've made it now. But then, you know, you have to wait for your second game for an awful lot longer. Is that a big period of frustration for a young pro?
No, I think that was the thing that used to happen. So you accepted it in a way, and it made you fight a little bit harder to sort of, you've had that taste, you know what it's like, you know, I want more of it. I think the disappointment comes when you play two or three games and then, you know, you're left out, you put back in again, and then you're left out, and you realise it's a learning curve, and you're just getting your experience of, because it does take its toll, because it's a lot quicker, and physically you can't just go in there and play 40-odd games as a teenager and expect to be a first-team member. I don't think, you know, anybody or any manager would allow that.
You coming in to become a first-team regular in around about 82, and you were playing left-back, which I know, you know, looking back at your career, you weren't particularly keen on playing there. And
well, I was a centre-back. I always come at the club as a centre-back. Made my debut as a centre-back. I played in the semi-final against West Ham as a centre-back, and then I played against Tottenham as well. The following year, we were struggling. Other than John Bailey, we never really had a left-back, and they were trying to... They also struggling as a left-sided midfield player, so they tried me in that position, but that wasn't going to be working. I was a little bit too sort of erratic, shall we say, and I wouldn't have said that I was suited for that position at all. So they tried me at left-back, and they seemed to like me there, but at the time, you play anywhere. You know, but in time, when it's not working, you're not happy, and especially the supporters are not happy, then you realise, you know, I'm not going to make a living at Everton Football Club as a left-back. But saying that, at the end of my career, I played left-back under Howard, and I really enjoyed it.
Mm. Is that because of the maturity that you'd gained?
Yeah, I'd most probably slowed down a bit as well as a player, and I was a little bit more composed on the ball, and obviously not as nervous. So it was You know, it was a bit daunting playing left back, believe it or not, as a youngster for Everton, because not only did they used to have the crowd screaming at me, I had a coach as well that'd be screaming like, "Get hold of it!"
Yeah.
The last thing you need when you're gonna, you know, the ball's just coming to you. I must admit, I didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed playing at times, like I said, later on in my career, but not early on.
Do you remember knocking on the door as a left back, as a young lad, and saying, "I don't want to play"?
Yeah, it'd come to the stage that I'd been in the side and left out too many times, and I thought, well, that's it, I need to go. So, you know, fair enough, there was no arguments with it. It got to the stage where Howard used to call me into the office, and I just used to put my head round the corner and just put my hand up and say, "Okay, thanks, no, I don't want to listen to your excuses," type of thing, you know, and I knew what was coming. I remember the first time I was really, really disappointed was, it was about, I'm not too sure if it was the first year or the second year Howard was there. No, I know the first year they never took me on tour, which was a disappointment, especially when the likes of the people the same age as me, Sharpie, and then were going the following year. I never went on tour again. That was to Holland. They brought in the likes of Mickey Walsh, who was going to play maybe at left back as well, instead of John Bailey. And I thought, I'm not too sure about this. For my centre back, I'm not even like second choice centre back if any of them go down injured, and not even second put choice left back. And then for some reason, centre back got injured. You know, maybe it was different in them days. Maybe the money was a lot tighter, as in how many people can actually go away. So Walshy moved to centre back, and I come in like as a left back. But the first game of the season was against their Birmingham, and I never played. They played John Bailey, but I remember on the Saturday when I was left out, that I just went around kicking people for fun in training. One of them was Howard that got the brunt of it, and the other one was Mick Lyons. It wasn't deliberate. I think he's seen that I was disappointed. Well, they were bad challenges as well, by the way, because like I say, I was a little bit more than a hothead when I was a kid coming through, and just seeing that, you know, this man's taken my place.
That was almost my next question, and that, you know, he made you captain at 23. The knocks on the door, the bad tackles in training, maybe all went towards thinking, this lad's got something about him I quite like, even though he is only 23.
Well, I think he tried to sign me when he was at Blackburn, so I believe. I remember the first time I was captain. I remember it for Everton, and I remember it for Wales. And I just remember looking around and thinking, why me? You know, there's that many players. And the first time for Everton, I mean, Mark Higgins was the captain. We went up to Scotland, pre-season tour, I think it was, and playing against Dundee United. And it was literally just as we're walking out, threw me the ball, take them out, rats. And I've looked around, there's Dave Johnson in the room, Alan Ainscough, Mickey Walsh, you know, these type of players. And I'm thinking, why me? A great honour, but why me? And the same for Wales against Scotland, that Mike England pulled me and said, I'm going to make you skipper. And I've looked around once again, there's Joey Jones, there's Robbie James, there's Mickey Thomas. I think Brian Flynn was coming to the end of his career then. And I just looked around and thinking, now these lads are 27, 28 and been in the game for years, and, you know, he's throwing me the captain's armband. And you know, it's something that, you know, you're very, very proud to have done, but it was one of them at the time. Why me?
The five-a-side you mentioned, Howard Kendall, used to take part in them. I imagine at that point he still had a bit about him, did he?
Played with Howard in the first team. We did all his running. fantastic player, fantastic passer of the ball, never give it away. And I think that's one thing that he learnt the players and the youngsters as well coming through. You know, your Gary Stevens is myself, Kevin Richardson, Sharpies. The ball's so precious, don't give it away. And if you don't give it away, you don't have to do as much running. And he, you know, just watching him do it, he was cute. He wasn't too good at getting it back at that time, like, but I'm sure in his day he was. But yeah, to actually play with one of your idols as a kid as well, you know, he's not just managing you, but you've played with him, and you've got Colin Harvey in the background as well. So it was great to sort of be a part of, but, you know, to play with as well.
What about a couple of examples of his man management? Because that's what a lot of the players from your era sort of point out and say he was fantastic at that.
He always used to say, look, you can have a drink. He said, but don't have a pint, because have a half a lager, but don't drink out the bottle. You know, if you think it's what people perceive of you by looking at you. And if you've got a half a lager, then, you know, people say, oh, he's been out, he's having a drink. If you have a pint, you're out, you're drunk. You know, oh, he's drinking out of a bottle. How uncouth. The thing is, at dinner, you could have two halves of lager, but you can't have a pint. Hold on a minute. It's a bit Irish, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what he meant is you can't have it in a pint glass, but you're allowed two halves of lager, or you're allowed two glasses of wine. There's nothing wrong in that. It makes you relaxed. And when he told you that you've got a free night, you can go out, he put a time limit on it. And if you weren't in, then you knew you were going to get whacked. And not just by him, but by the rest of the players, because you've let him down and maybe we can't have another night out.
Yeah.
And that was his philosophy, as in looking. But his training methods were just something that I thought was absolutely fantastic. I took him with me at Shrewsbury and at Chester. And I didn't realise at the time, I thought they were actually brilliant. And I thought, you know, the games that you have in through pre-season were about getting you fit. You know, if you had eight games, pre-season games, and you played five or six of them, the fitness was going to be coming through them. But you need a little bit of a build-up to that fitness to play the games, obviously. And I thought his training methods were absolutely superb. The other thing I didn't realise was, until I was a manager, is, and I don't know how true, or you'd have to ask Howard, because I don't know if he'd keep records or he would have had records, but I know I certainly did, that I never had one injury in training. I had them in matches, but not in training. Not myself, but the whole squad.
Strains, you mean?
Nothing. Not one injury. So there must be something in the training that actually stops you. You know, that you're getting the warm-up, you're getting the warm down, maybe you're not realising you were doing warm downs in them days. But there must have been something about the training, and it wasn't until I become a manager and my physio come to me, he says, I've never worked for anybody like you, that I've never got an injury in pre-season. He said, all the injuries are coming from the matches, which, you know, you're going to get them anyway.
So he was years ahead of his time, really, in terms of his training methods.
Yeah. In the training methods, I thought, yeah, spot on and enjoyable. I think our philosophy as well is that you come in, you train, you give him your maximum, you go home, and you come in fresh the next day to give it again, the same again, and not coming in and thinking, oh, I don't want to do that.
Take us to 84 then, and you get to the culmination of your career at a very young age, you know, what you'd always dreamed on doing.
Yeah, I mean, do you realise that you're going to get there from an early part of the season? We're struggling early on in the season. We lose our skipper. You know, I still think to this day, if Iggy was there, we still would have won the FA Cup, and maybe we still would have won things after that, because he was a tremendous centre-half. And I took over from him, and we just sort of progressed. Derek come in, and we had a great understanding. And we just sort of went on and went on, you know, that we were winning games, and the momentum, you know, obviously the signing of Andy Gray had a big bearing of it on things, and Colin Harvey gets promoted to first team coach. And it wasn't until then that Peter Reid become a regular, Andy Gray come into the side. Combination of a couple of things, and for me it was three things that happened within a short period of time.
And a throw into Watford, which Price takes, and here's Forrest Stevens, volleyed carefully forward to Graham Sharp. Here's Trevor Stevens again on the right hand side, trying to get on the outside of Price, into a crossing position, swings it in dangerously to the far post. Gray arriving, he's knocked it in. Andy Gray has scored for Everton, and that could be the one which wins the FA Cup.
I think Andy come in and just give us another belief. It's not an arrogance, but he brought this confidence in. And, you know, you're looking at Andy, been a great player. You know, he never trained all week, he was on ice. And then we end up having a head tennis game on a Friday, and it's World War III. You know, studs being shown when your head's at the net, and people clashing heads and getting stitches on a Friday, all over a pound. He just brought something. I just think that Andy brought that part of the winning mentality.
The long wait is over. The first major success since the championship of 1970. And Howard Kendall, such an integral part of that great side of Harry Kettering. Kevin Ratcliffe, who leads the Blues up the 39 steps. A boyhood Everton fan who must have dreamt of this moment over and over again in his 23 years. And now it's a reality. He reaches the top of the steps with Graham Sharp and Andy Gray, the two goal scorers behind him. Shakes hands with his chairman, Philip Carter, and with the Duchess of Kent, who has a few quiet words with him, a blue and white scarf draped around his neck, and the FA Cup in his hands. He kisses it and shows it off to those Everton fans who've waited so long for this moment.
I was chuffed. I was chuffed for my dad, my mum, my gran and my granddad, my other granddad and nan. I was disappointed for and my nan, who wasn't alive, because she started me off. She bought me my first set of football boots, and when I made me, got me cap for my country at 15 years of age as a schoolboy, she bought me a watch. They were part of it. You know, they're the ones that I wanted to play football for. I just couldn't believe it, that it had happened. You know, that you're there and you're going to walk up first and pick it up. And I look back now and I feel selfish because I never asked Mark Higgins to come up with me because, I, like I say, you know, with that, even though Mark was injured maybe around about the November time, Mark was, you know, an excellent player. And I do think that we still would have won the FA Cup and won league chat titles with Mark Higgins in the side, because he was that good of a player.
The following season was just unbelievable. You know, you become the most successful captain at such a young age, league winners, the Cup Winners' Cup as well. What sticks in the mind most as to being the biggest achievement of all of that?
I think losing the first game of the season against Spurs, I think it was that year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
4-1, I think was the biggest kick up the backside. I think they were going to be our main challenges. I think Clive Allen scored 3 or 4 goals in that game. But we battered them. We absolutely battered them. But every time they attacked, they seemed to get a goal. Going to Chelsea and you're thinking, you know, I mean, Chelsea weren't the great side that they were now, but they were a decent side, decent players. And you're thinking, we've got it all to do here. I played really well and Kev Richardson got a goal. I don't think Kev Sheedy played, and Kev played. Then it was no turning back, and I think we romped the league. I remember as a kid that somebody said, I'll tell you who it was, Jeff Nulty said to me, it's a great feeling when you know you're going to go out there and you're going to win the game, but it's how many you're going to win it by. And I thought, bloody hell. I remember going into a game against Notts County. John Todosi was the quickie in them days, and I think he scored the opening goal and 1-0 behind. And I remember thinking, we'll win this 3 or 4. And it was, we won it 4-1. And it's amazing, you're going to go out there and you're just thinking, who's going to get the goals today? Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a feeling to have. And I think, you know, most successful sides have that.
The Bayern Munich game sticks in, I think, everyone's memory, probably, you know, more so the players that took part in it, the Goodison leg where you couldn't even get into the ground because of the crowds. Did you have that feeling that at that point we have to win it for these people?
We've had the experience before when we've been at Stoke and places like that with, you know, something like 12,000-14,000 more fans in than the home support, and it's very hard maybe to disappoint them, you know, to go out and not perform. We literally thought that we did the job. Maybe it's in Munich that we got a draw out there, and you know, to go a goal behind. But we were so fierce, so strong, and you know, Howard was a good tactician. You know, that I remember that in the changing room, that doesn't want the centre backs to have the ball. If at all, just get out to the full-backs quickly. If you can't get it to the full-backs, Nev, you've just got to pump everything long. And all throw-ins have got to go into Sharpie and Andy. And we'll get the flick-ons, push in, and the crowd will suck the ball into the back of the net. And that was his half-time team talk. And he was saying, like, you know, more or less, don't play football. You know, get the ball into the box as quickly as possible in the air. You'll out-battle them. And you know, that was a good thing about the side, is that we could mix it with anybody, any type. We could play football. If it was a battle, it was a battle. If it was a fight, it's a fight. We had players in the side that would be behind you. You knew if you went in for anything that you'd had, you know, 10 other guys behind you, you know, backing you up.
Ludwig Kohl, or Kogel, do you remember your tackle on him in the Bayern Munich game?
No, yeah. Well, I remember. Well, we used to earmark certain people, shall we say.
Danger men.
Yeah. Take them out.
I found an interview with you, I think it wasn't long after you retired, and I laughed out loud at it. You'd said that, you know, you're picking up a lot of bookings and being spoken to by referees, and then I think Howard Kendall had said to you, just say sorry. You'll be amazed how much of a difference that will make.
Pick
with referees.
The man up.
Yeah.
You know, sorry about that. Missed time, that one. You know, how did that happen? And it was. I mean, I think maybe it's trying to make a stamp on the game in the right way.
Yeah.
Let's make a stamp on the game, and you know, you're not to be messed with, and sort of no expression. And I mean, Mick Lyons always used to say to me, he says, I can't believe what you do, and then you just walk away from it and don't even say a thing. But maybe that was early on in my career. I should have done it, and maybe I wouldn't have been suspended as many times as what I was, because I remember I had more bookings than Elton John one year. It was, you know, coming into to October or September, and you always used to be suspended at the same time. Couldn't quite manage Christmas right. No, that was, yeah, just pick them up and, you know, tap them on the head and sorry about that, and it's amazing.
Winning it back in 87 must have been sweet, though.
Most will be sweeter than it was the first time round, yeah. They always say it's harder the second time, but I think the way that we did it was good. I think we played more football. To say there was better players, most probably a stronger squad. Still the same. Still the same sort of euphoria between the lads and, you know, camaraderie that we had was still there. And, you know, that's what you've got to remember, that teamship that you have between the players is so important to get you through games that normally wouldn't get you through games. You know, to have a bunch of players that all get on, all socialise, and when you're travelling by bus for 4 hours and coming back for 4 hours and you're in hotels and that, so important to have that team spirit.
Okay, we're in the company of Kevin Ratcliffe. That was part two. We'll talk about his departure from Everton, also his experience on the international scene and his experience of being a manager as well. Join us for the final part of Match of My Life with Kevin Ratcliffe after the break.
City Sport. One player. One life. The Match of My Life. City Talk 105.9.
Thanks to your help, Knowsley is a safer place, because in the last 6 months, we've made over 400 arrests and seized over 40 weapons. Your information means that drugs, guns and serious criminals are off our streets. This is your home, and together we can make it an even safer and better place to live. So if you know about or are worried about gun crime in Knowsley, we'll respond. Call 0800 458 1211. The Safer Knowsley Partnership, keeping crime off our streets.
What is the Merseyside and West Lancs Lifelong Learning Network, and what can it do for you?
It can help you gain the qualifications you need to get the job you want. It can help you get into full or part-time learning. It can help you onto a degree course. It can help you gain the skills that could change your life.
It's amazing what the Lifelong Learning Network can do for you. But don't take our word for it. Be amazed. Call them today on 0800 195 5063.
You know, I love Buffet Star. Delicious, mouth-watering, scrumptious, piping hot, healthy Chinese and Thai food. Eat as much as you like for under 6 quid. And talking of squid, don't you just love it pan-fried with lashings of salt and chilli?
Mm-hmm. Buffet Star. 60 delicious Thai and Chinese dishes to choose from for less than 6 quid. Buffet Star. Hanover Street, Liverpool. Just round the corner from Central Station.
City Sport. One player. One life. The Match of My Life. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to City Talk 105.9. It's Peter McDowell, and I'm in the company tonight of Kevin Ratcliffe, and it's a Match of My Life. I want to fast forward a couple of years now, Kev, to your departure from Everton. What you remember about going to Cardiff?
Well, obviously disappointed that it was coming to an end at Everton. I think, obviously, I think it was Gary Ablett, the gaffer, had signed, and as soon as I sort of read the papers in the morning, I knew, well, that's me finished then. And a bit disappointed because, you know, I've gone in the office and Howard said that, obviously, no longer. I'd already sort of the captaincy, I'd lost the captaincy to Dave Watson. I mean, that couldn't have been lost to a better person, to be fair. A bit disappointed the way that it all sort of went after that, and the fact that, you know, that Howard wanted a little bit of money for me, and then towards the end of the season turned around and said I could go for a free, and I was disappointed in that. But I suppose that's football.
The first season that you spent with Cardiff, Championship winners.
Well, I went to Cardiff then just after Christmas. My contract, Howard said he couldn't sort of justify having me at the football club anymore. So, I, you know, it was about getting a club, and I think it was a month without sort of pay. And then I think it was just before Christmas that Eddie May of Cardiff come on. He said, would you consider coming and playing? I had Carlisle come on to me, wasn't quite sure. And then Eddie come in, and I thought, whoa, what a great offer this is. Cardiff, Welsh club. You know, I love Cardiff. I thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. I was able to do what they did in the training. It was a bit more sort of physical. And then my first game against Carlisle, I go and score a goal. I'd only scored 2 goals in my whole career at Everton. I scored on my debut for Cardiff. I was a hero. I was loved by everybody. And It was, I stayed with a lad called Neil Matthews in Cardiff. They paid for me digs, but I stayed with one of the pros, so they paid him for me to stay there. And another Scouser called John Williams, who used to play for Tranmere, Big John, who I still keep in touch with, and he's Big, Big John now. but I had a great time, great 8 months. I went there and I think we were 13 games unbeaten, ended up winning the title at the end of the year, and unfortunately I ended up going and having an operation on my knee and missing the last game of the season at Scunthorpe. I just loved it, and I signed again the following year, but I fell out with Eddie and I fell out with the chairman, a fella called Rick Wright, who owned the holiday camp down there, and on Barry Island, and I called him Rick Wrong, and it just didn't work out.
Didn't go down.
I just fell out. And I'm not one of them type of people that fell out, but I just felt that this was a club that should be... The club should have been in the Championship maybe 10 years ago.
You finishing and then reunited with Mickey Pedgick over at Chester as his assistant boss. How did that come about?
I was on holiday. I was going to sign for Berry, for Mickey Walsh and Stan Tennant. And I got the phone call, I was in Florida, and Mickey sort of put a deal on the table for me, which I was happy with, and then part of the deal was taken away, which was a bit strange while I was on holiday, and I got a call towards the end off Pedge, and I used to travel in with Pedge. He lived in Nannoch, the other side of Mold, so we used to travel in when he was at Everton, but he phoned me up and said, would you like to come and be my assistant? I said, where? And he said, I'll let you know when you come over. Would you like to be my assistant? So I said, yeah. It's something that I was looking into, doing a bit of coaching. And I went along, and little did I realise it was just down the road at Chester. It was a massive drop in wage, even than what Berry were asking. But I felt that because Berry had reneged on a deal, that I thought, well, sorry, I can renege on it altogether. I signed with Pedge, and obviously I didn't realise the mess we were going into at the time. Moved to a new ground, manager had gone, bit of, not too happy, shall we say, the punters were with me and Pedge coming in. They thought it was all done. Graham Barrow had left, up shop and gone, even though they got promotion that year. And it was, turning up for training, four people turning up. Chris Lightfoot and Roger Priest was two players, remember, and the rest of them just putting transfer requests on and wanting a fortune to stay, which wasn't there. So we literally took over with four or five players, a lad called Dave Flitcroft, who stayed with us, youngster, a lad called John Murphy, a Scouser, who was an apprentice, and we had to build a side right from that. David Felgate, the goalkeeper as well, and we had to build a full side together, and it was going to be a very, very tough, for the money that we were paying them. They were good players for the money we were paying, but not good enough. The wage that we had was poor. And subsequently, we got relegated that year, but Mick only lasted to something like December. The physio took over because I wasn't sure. I was offered it, but I wasn't sure about taking over because Mick had given me the job. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was in a crossroads in my career that I was thinking, I really wanted to go to Florida to emigrate. My wife didn't. I was at a crossroads with my career and my life, and I sat back and I talked to Pedge because he'd been sacked, and he said, go for it, go for the job. And it was too late, the physio had got it, and which turned out to be an even bigger disaster, and I ended up running the whole club from around about the February time right the way through to the end of the season on my own with unfortunately, a lad called John Kerr, who's no longer with us. He was a community officer, but gave us a great hand down there, and also Gary Shelton, who was a player. Our ambition, believe it or not, when I took over, was not to finish bottom of the league. Last game of the season, we played Leighton Orient, we beat them, we got off the bottom of the league, and they finished bottom. And that was an achievement for me. And the manager, we went down to Brentford, and we drew against Brentford. And it was by their skin of the teeth that they actually got a draw. Because we played really, really well, and after the game, the chairman said to me, would you like the job? And he was desperate for me to bring somebody else in, but I was happy with Gary Shelton. I was going to bring Ken Roberts in, because I think you've got to have somebody experienced that's been in the game. They can put their arm around you. They've dealt with problems that you've never dealt with as a player. they've been a manager. So, and I learnt one thing from him that, you know, I found it very, very difficult sometimes that you can find players these days as much as you want, and it doesn't affect them. And it's mainly because you can get credit anywhere you want these days. You know, you can go to British Home Stores and open up an account and put things on the account. So you're not hurting them. Like, you know, years ago that you lived what was in your pocket and what was in your wage. You didn't have accounts here and accounts there. You were lucky enough if you had a credit card. But these, you know, over the last maybe 15, 16, 20 years, you can get credit anywhere. So it wasn't hurting them. And he said to me, time. Hurt them with the time. And it's the best thing I ever learnt. That, you know, okay, then see you at five. I'm here at 5 o'clock, so why can't you be? Mm-hmm. And it was a great sort. That was one of the incidents that I can say. And obviously, there's plenty of other things on the pitch that I used to talk to him about. But that's you know, a great learning curve for me. But I enjoyed every single minute at Chester. It went on from there. We had a great season the following season. I brought in Cyril Regis, who was an absolute. I always believe that if you're a manager, your first signing's your best signing, or got to be your best signing. And I made Cyril my point of coming, and he was the crowd. You've talked to people in Chester, and they absolutely love Cyril Regis. And he loved his time there, but he always comes up to me now. I loved it at Chester. He said, I couldn't believe it. I used to come in on Monday, and you used to say, come in, see you Thursday. What's that? We said, well, I've never had that before. I said, well, you know, you were 38 years of age, for God's sake. How many? You played 500 or 600 games. You know your body. You know, why have you been playing for this long? And he said, oh, I loved it there, you know. Mm. And the people looked after him as well, because he put it in on the pitch.
Shrewsbury probably wasn't, you know, a time that you really look back on with any fondness. A big headline from it being the FA Cup knocking Everton out.
Yeah, I mean, I went there, I mean, 3 months out of the game, and I took over from Jake King there. Budget was far bigger at Shrewsbury than what it was at Chester. But there was a negative attitude about the place that I didn't like. Supporters, boardroom, they were the same. It was always doom and gloom. It was, you know. And the first year we staved off relegation, and the second year that I was there, we had a good season. And the following year, obviously, we had a good cup run, but unfortunately, after the Everton game, never won a game after that and got relegated. And I don't, still to this day, cannot say. Well, I can. I can tell you why we got relegated. Two people got injured. A lad called Mickey Heathcote, centre-half, and Mark Atkins, the centre midfield player. And then two players who were on good wages, we couldn't replace them. Mm. And they're one of the reasons we got relegated, because we couldn't replace them. They were absolutely tremendous. But everybody goes on to me about the Everton game, and I must admit, but on the day, as soon as I seen the team, I thought we could win. I said to the players, this is your best opportunity to knock a Premiership side out, because this team is not a Premiership side. And if you get in them, and I remember the Rooney played, mm-hmm. Radinsky up front, and everything at the moment, at the time, was Rooney, Rooney, Rooney. And I said, look, Rooney's not your problem. Radinsky's going to be our problem today, the way we are. Radinsky, balls over the top. I said, he can catch pigeons. Says, you don't know what he's going to do with a pigeon when he catches it, but he catches pigeons. Yeah. Rooney, you can let him come off, you can let him turn, you can let him run with the ball, because the ball always comes to you, because the pitch is bobbly as hell, you know. And it worked a treat. And I says, get at the fullbacks, get at Unzi, get at Clark, because Peter Clark played it right back. And we played him in pre-season. And although we'd lost 2-0, I thought we put him under pressure, especially the two strikers, Jemson and Rogers. They'd had good games in them games and caused Stubbsy and Weir a few problems, and they did exactly the same. And we had a little bit more quality because we had Woney on set pieces, and obviously Jemson getting the free kick, which is a tremendous free kick, and you know, then the delivery from me and Woney for Gemmo to get in front and get that glancing header at the near post. But on the day, I thought we thoroughly deserved it.
Couple of quick fires to finish off for today. Tell us how good you were as a player. You know, if you were to maybe value yourself these days, a centre-half that could play at full-back with pace.
I was good as the players around me. I thought the players around me were absolutely fantastic. I say, if I missed a challenge, there was always somebody else there to cover up. I had two great midfield players in Reedy and Brace, who just sort of, if you think about it, just protected you in front. and we only had to worry about the balls over the top. Two fullbacks that could get forward, and when you've got the big fella behind you, who's most probably the best player I've ever seen and played with, then you've got a great chance, because he was just phenomenal in everything he did. And then if you've got the likes of Sharp, you're going to get your 15 goals a year every year, then you just need somebody else to play alongside him that can do similar.
There's an easier one for you. Worst dressed teammate?
Well, everybody had most probably picked me. There was a lot of worse dressed in them days. When you look back, I mean, everybody...
They thought they looked good at the time.
Yeah, yeah. You know, spending fortunes on gear and...
Give us a name. Any name.
Well, Reedy was... it's got to be up there. He looked best in a pair of jeans, to be fair. I suppose myself as well. I'll put myself there as well.
Best and worst behaved on a night out?
I think we all enjoyed a night out, definitely. Didn't really have a lot of trouble when we're out. I must admit, very far and few between that if we did have trouble. I mean, there's always the, you know, your people will pick up on Pat, and, you know, I mean, he was a little bit unpredictable, shall we say. But I must admit, when he was in our company as a gang of lads, then we never seemed to have a problem.
Was anybody that sort of would go out and maybe try and limit it to one or two drinks?
Well, Derek seemed to be more of a, you know, kept himself to himself. Neville never used to drink. Peter Beardsley come, but he used to come out and he used to be the kitty man, which was great to have somebody sober looking after the kitty. Sheeds was a Jekyll and Hyde. He just didn't know, you know, what he was going to say, because he used to say things when he'd had a few drinks that he wouldn't say when he was sober.
Did you really challenge Linford Christie to a race after he won gold in Barcelona?
No.
Was that a bit
I don't know where that come on from. I had a race with an American footballer in Hawaii on the beach, on the promenade. It was about a 25-yard race, and we'd had a few beers that afternoon, and it was getting a little bit late, and the challenge was thrown down by the rest of the lads that Rats is quicker than any of the American footballers. So we ended up having a race, and believe it or not, I just beat him. And I think he was a little bit gutted when I turned round to him and said, "Should we have another one? Now I'll take me flip-flops off." And I had me flip-flops on. And you know, it was it was funny at the time.
Yeah, I bet it was. You look back on your career, and, you know, aside from the pace, lots of people say he was a hard rat. Mm. He was a hard man. Were you one for training ground bust-ups? Did you lose your temper in training?
No, not really. No. I think later on, after Howard and everything, yeah, a couple of players that come in, your Ray Altervelts, and got a little bit annoyed with Ray once because he kept picking on Pat Nevin, and it was always Pat Nevin. I thought, this so-called hard player from Holland's come over and, you know, picking on like the weakest player in the side, and a little sort of tattle, "Why me?" he says. I says, "Why Pat?" So, you know, that, but not really. After that, me and Ray were fine. But no, not really. I had a few bust ups with Martin Keown, but I think everybody had a bust up with Martin Keown. He was just that sort of, you know, he was the person that everybody, he just annoyed everybody.
Sum it up for us then, Kevin, and tell us how you would like to be remembered by Everton fans.
Not as the most successful captain, because that means, you know, we've come nowhere near of being what we should be. That's one thing. People might be a bit selfish and say the other, but no, you know, for me, I want success for Everton Football Club, and that means somebody taking over, you know, being the most successful captain, so be it. I mean, that means we're in the right direction. Born and bred Evertonian, let's play for his club and, you know, never let him down, really, and that's what, you know, that's all I wanted to do, was play football for Everton Football Club. From an early age, I did it. But I never imagined in my wildest dreams that I was going to actually captain them and win things for them. I mean, that was just an extra bonus for me. And, you know, at the time, it just all happened so quickly. And I missed the dinner ladies that we had in Carol and Betty, Jimmy the groundsman, Dougie the groundsman, Dave the janitor. You know, people like that, that missed that as much as I missed the players and, you know, playing.